What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rich Movie Podcast, a podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to have some freaking opinions about the Oscars, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. You're bang on with that one. Of course I got opinions about the Oscars.
It's time for some hot takes on this bonus episode of the show coming out at some point before the Oscars. And we're just going to be going through the categories, saying what we think we might win, and we also might be we want to win. As simple as that. So, you know, strap in and have a good time. Perk, let's jump into it. First category, best actor in a leading role. Nominees, Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. Perk, what's your prediction, and what do you want to win?
So the odds right now, they've got Cillian Murphy kind of running away with it. For me, it's Murphy or Giamatti. I think those are the two standouts for me. I really like what both of them did with their roles. Cillian Murphy has to do so much acting with his eyes. It's very impressive what he gets done. Yeah. And this is just beyond wheelhouse for Giamatti. And he nails every moment. That's who I've got.
Okay. Yeah, for me, I'm not really going to be mad at if it was Paul, Cillian, or Jeffrey, I'm going to be happy. Prediction-wise, probably Cillian. And then probably my desire is probably... It's hard. I'll go Giamatti. I just love The Holdover so much. And I think he's just so good in that. I think you can't really go wrong too much in that category.
Well, you can, but.
Well, yeah. 3 out of 5, at least. I mean, you saw Rustin. Coleman's great.
Coleman's good in Rustin. Bradley Cooper's a little bit too Oscar-y for me.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's move down to the next category. Actor in a supporting role. Nominees are Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Another stacked category.
Yeah, this is a really outstanding category. The current odds have it runaway for Robert Downey Jr. I'm not mad at that at all. Mm-hmm. I think he's fantastic in Oppenheimer. Everyone else has kind of faded a little bit. At first, it looked like De Niro was a contender. I mean, his performance is really good. But I think people have just kind of gotten around the narrative of RDJ. Me personally, I'm on board. I think of the bunch, like everyone does great in what they've got. But yeah. Robert Downey Jr. is really outstanding in a very against typecast role. I would say maybe my best supporting actor wasn't even nominated with Charles Melton for May, December.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'll probably also predict RDJ. My desire, I'd be happy with a lot of these. I think I'd probably be most happy with Ruffalo, actually. It'd be fun to see him get an award, and he's so good in Poor Things.
He is really just outstanding.
Yeah, but pretty much anybody except for De Niro, I'll be happy. Because these are all great performances, so. All right. Let's go on to the ladies actress in a leading role. Nominees are Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone for Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Emma Stone for Poor Things. What are the people saying out there in the streets?
Yeah, so the streets got it. The odds have it. It's very tight between Stone and Gladstone. Yeah. The way it's looking right now, according to the odds, is it's edging towards Lily Gladstone. I'd be perfectly happy with that. I like it's when your only complaint about a performance is that you wish there was more of it. That's a pretty good, you know, seal of approval. She's terrific. Emma Stone's also great in a very different role. But for me, it's Sandra Hüller. She put on one of the most impressive acting performances I've ever seen. So that would be it for me. But of the three of them, I'd be happy with any of them. Even Carey Mulligan is pretty great in Maestro. She's the standout from that as well. But and Annette Bening is okay. But there are now in my brain so many deserving nominees that should have been in there over Annette Bening.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I've only seen one of these movies, being Poor Things, so I can't really speak on it too much. But I love Emma Stone. I think she does so much in that movie. She has to do so much for that role. So I'd love her to win. But like you said, anyone else, I'm not going to be too mad about, especially Lily or Sandra. So fingers crossed for that. I don't think if it'd be Annette Bening, I'd be mad, but I don't think she'll win that.
It's not happening.
Yeah. All right. Supporting actress. We have Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, America Ferreira in Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Perk, where are we at?
Yeah, so this category is a done deal. It's Divine Joy Randolph.
As it should be.
Yeah, it's so deserved. Her performance is so good and feels so real in Holdovers that, yeah, I'm not upset with that at all. For me, it is close. Danielle Brooks is so outstanding in The Color Purple, a movie that was almost entirely overlooked by the Academy, this being the only nomination. She had to be that good to get it, and she absolutely is. Her performance is tear-jerking and funny and just hits to the absolute heart. So I would maybe even lean Brooks, but honestly, the two of them are just such great performances. So either I would be happy with, but yeah, this one I think is pretty much decided. Divine Joy Randolph.
And I am happy about it. I love The Holdovers. All right. Animated feature film. We have The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Now, Perk, do we miss Robot Dreams or is that not out yet?
We haven't missed it. We have not had the availability to see it.
Yeah. I've heard incredible things about it.
It will be having one limited showing on the 6th of March, and the Oscars being on the 10th, which to me is nonsense. What this movie is supposed to be in contention for last year, and you can, if the common man cannot have seen this movie yet, which is insane. It looks fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But yeah, to this point, we've not seen it. I've not seen Nimona. You have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I have not seen Elemental. Did you watch that?
No.
Okay.
No desire.
But even if I had, like, this one, so the odds right now have it, it's close, but it's Spider-Verse. For me, it's Boy and the Heron. And I don't know if there were to be an upset odds wise, I think this could be the category, just because voters will know that there's another Spider-Verse coming. And surely this has got to be Miyazaki's last film.
It's not. He's already working on the next one.
Never mind. Okay. But
he always says it and then he keeps working.
Right. But yeah, for me, Across the Spider-Verse is absolutely great. But it's half of a movie.
Right. So it's part one.
Yeah. It's hard for me to judge it against like a more complete work like Boy and the Heron. But also I'm just a fiend for Ghibli stuff most of the time. And I know that movie didn't work for everyone, but it really worked for me. So that would be my pick.
Has Ghibli ever won an Oscar?
Yeah. Miyazaki got it for Spirited Away at a minimum.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah, it's tricky. I think I wonder how much the part one-ness of Spider-Man hurts it, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder how much the Japanese of it hurts
or helps because the approachability of Across the Spider-Verse, like there are probably Oscar voters who just won't watch a movie in a different language.
Right. And I also worry about the Disney Pixar-ness of Elemental, if that gives us any extra points that it may or may not deserve.
Jesus, I hope not.
Yeah, I think this is a weird year. I definitely don't see Nimona winning. I can't imagine Robot Dreams winning just because not a lot of press for it. I'm going to predict Spider-Man and I'm going to desire Spider-Man, I guess. I don't know. This category ended up being weaker for me personally than I would have hoped. Like I enjoyed Nimona. Boy and the Heron didn't connect with me, but it's a gorgeous movie. And then Elemental didn't care to see it. And then Robot Dreams I'd like to, but like I said, haven't had a chance to. So
sure.
Weird category, but for me personally, I guess I'll go Spider-Man. So
okay.
All right. Cinematography. We have El Conde, which you can hear Perk's crazy review of that on
this week's show.
On this week's episode of the podcast, El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things. Where are we at, Perk?
Yeah, so for cinematography, the odds, it's looking like it'll probably be pretty set in stone for Hoyte van Hoytema for Oppenheimer. And yeah, it's hard to argue. The movie is really gorgeous. I get it. But this, believe it or not, this is an incredibly strong category. I think my pick probably would end up being Poor Things. I just love the look of that movie. I love the way every shot looks. But Maestro is actually really, really well done from a cinematographical standpoint. And I think Bradley Cooper is a great director, which helps with that. Killers of the Flower Moon is more subtle, but also gorgeous. It really works well with the palettes that it has at hand. And El Conde is, while it's an unhinged film, it's just gorgeous to look at. So really any of these movies are deserving. They're definitely deserving of the nomination. It's probably going to be Oppenheimer. I would lean Poor Things.
Okay. Yeah. I've only seen Oppenheimer and Poor Things on this list. Of those two, it's hard. I think
it is hard. Yeah.
I think for Poor Things, for me personally, I enjoy the production design more than the cinematography.
That's fair.
So I think I might lean Oppenheimer on this one just because of the types of shots they had to do. So I'll go for Hoytema for Oppenheimer for me on this one. All right. Costume design. Do you want to do this category?
Yeah. Well, we can kind of group the three. I don't know. They're all going to be one of two movies, I think.
Yeah. So costume design, we have Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
So this is the Barbie or Poor Things category. It's close.
Exactly.
I would go towards Poor Things, but I think that's just because of my feelings towards the movie are stronger.
Yeah.
Honestly,
Barbie has to do so much historical reference that they pulled in. I think that might edge it out.
And in fairness, I did not buy a piece of the costume design from Poor Things, and I did buy a piece of the costume design from Barbie. So maybe I'll shift my answer that way.
Yeah. I'm going to go Barbie on this one for prediction and desire, I think. All right. Also, we want to do another big category, directing. We have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, Nolan for Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest.
So I know that everyone was bummed that Greta Gerwig didn't get nominated, but this is just a really outstanding spread of directors. And it's nice to see the recognition for Triet and Glazer. The odds have it that it's Nolan's year and this is his time to get one. I think it's entirely fair. My personal standing, I think Scorsese does maybe even a little bit better than Nolan from a directorial standpoint, but I'm okay with the Nolan win. Killers of the Flower Moon is just so, so well directed. It's one of the strongest points of the movie.
For me, I've only seen Oppenheimer, Poor Things again. My prediction is Oppenheimer. My desire is actually Poor Things. I think the vision for that movie is very specific and was executed flawlessly on all levels. So I'm going to go Yorgos for my personal pick, but I think Oppenheimer will give Nolan his first Oscar for directing, right?
Yes, yeah. It'll be his first Oscar, bar none, although he will most likely pick up multiple.
Yeah.
If the odds are to be believed.
Should we skip over the documentaries?
Yeah, I didn't see any of the documentaries in either short or long form.
Okay. Would you want to do editing?
Sure.
All right. Film editing. We have Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, and Poor Things.
So the odds have it for editing as another pickup for Oppenheimer. This is another really great category. I love what Kevin Tense did for The Holdovers, with kind of making the film feel very 70s. I think a lot of that is in the editing as well. Anatomy of a Fall is a really hard film to edit together, and it's done really well as well. But for me, this one's not as close as directing, but it's Killers of the Flower Moon. It's just a perfectly edited film. And it's no accident. It's Thelma Schoonmaker, who's been partnered with Scorsese for like his entire career. And a lot of people view her as the GOAT of film editing. And yeah, it's great. It's really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you reminded me about the holdovers, because the movie's done so well, you assume it's all in camera, like kind of the staticiness and, you know, just the feel of that movie, but a lot of it is post-production. So I was originally going to say Oppenheimer, but man, yeah, I think my personal pick will be holdovers then. Prediction, I don't know. I may probably kill her based on what you said. I didn't see that one, so it's hard for me to say, but
sure.
Personal pick, I'm going holdovers. I think because, just the way they got that movie to feel like an older film was just incredible. All right, international feature film. We have Io Capitano from Italy, Perfect Days from Japan, Society of the Snow from Spain, The Teacher's Lounge from Germany, and The Zone of Interest from the UK. So Perk, you've seen two of these.
Yeah. So this is a sparse category for me. I meant to do better. I just ran out of time. Io Capitano looked really good, and I'm bummed I didn't get a chance to see it in time. Society of the Snow looked really hard to watch, but probably really good.
I've heard it's fantastic.
Yeah. We'll see if I ever get up the gumption to actually watch it. I don't know anything about The Teacher's Lounge, but we both loved Perfect Days. We saw it together.
Mm-hmm.
When one international feature is nominated for Best Picture, it's going to win. So this is the Zone of Interest category, and I'm not mad about that. I really liked Perfect Days, but Zone of Interest is such an interesting and challenging film. That I think it'll be a well-deserved Oscar for it to pick up.
Yeah. No, as much as I love Perfect Days, to me, it doesn't have the juice as an Oscar movie, you know? It's just not that kind of movie. So yeah, I would not be surprised that doesn't win. I think Zone of Interest is definitely the pick here. Though, like I said, Society of the Snow got a lot of buzz when it dropped on Netflix. I don't know if that would translate for votes for the Oscars, but I think you're right. Zone of Interest is probably the play here. All right, let's go down to makeup and hairstyling.
Yeah, so Golda. Right. Oh, sorry. Yep.
Yeah. Golda, which I've never heard of. We have Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and Society of the Snow.
So Golda is a biopic about Golda Meir. And yeah, it's interesting to see both of these nominated when I think there's a bit of controversy on some of the prosthetic work and the makeup on, non-Jewish actors playing Jewish characters. The book, the bets, the odds, it's Maestro. Honestly, I'm not passionate about the makeup in most of these films. So in general, you kind of lean to whoever had to do the most.
Yeah.
I would maybe go Poor Things, but I haven't seen Golda. I haven't seen Society of the Snow. So this is not a strong category for me to weigh in on. But it's looking like it'll be Maestro.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not very opinionated as well. I think there's a chance for Society just because of the subject material of that movie and what it's about. I could see the makeup being very important, and if it's good, then it's be a lot of work to do there. And Poor Things, like I'm thinking, I guess, of Defoe's character. Right. And but again, it's more like costuming for that one. I don't know. It's tricky. I'm not too opinionated as well. So we'll have to see on that one what happens. But all right. Music. Starting with original score. We have American Fiction by Laura Cartman. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny by John Williams. Killers of the Flower Moon by Robbie Robertson. Oppenheimer by Ludwig Göransson. And Poor Things by Jerskin Fendricks. Perk, you're a big music guy. Where are you at?
Yes.
With this
one? So I don't know. Especially in the last couple of years, I've just been so much more aware of film scores and how they contribute. This is a category that I haven't seen Indiana Jones, but I assume it's pretty similar to the other Indiana Jones scores, and they're all good. And I had like four favorite scores that stuck out to me this year, and two of them were nominated. So American Fiction, Laura Cartman, and Poor Things, Jurskin Fendricks. That those were the two that stuck out to me. Upon like looking back and thinking about it, Oppenheimer has a really good score. And yeah. Then Killers of the Flower Moon, Robbie Robertson, which I think this is actually posthumous. That score is a lot more reserved. It's not as in your face as some of the others, but it's really stunning and fantastic. The two that were, I actually think I maybe even put above all of these were, Boy and the Heron was my favorite score of the year.
I agree.
For, yeah. Is it Joe Hisahashi? Sorry if I butchered that.
I don't want to miss yeah. say as I'm not going to guess.
and then, I don't know who did the score, which is bad research on my standpoint, but Past Lives has just a wonderful score as well. But of the bunch, it's for me, it's just, I love the experimentation in Poor Things score by Jurskin Fendricks. It's just so the way that it's like almost plucky and like string instruments breaking and bubbly and
yeah.
All over the place. I really love that score. I think it added so much in line with the theme of that movie. But the odds have it, it's going to be Goranson. And
he's on the rise, man. He's a new hotness.
And in fairness, watching a breakdown of the I forget what the track is called, but it's when he's having the visions in his head and he's throwing glasses into the corner. Watching that back, I was like, oh, I've got goosebumps. That's right. It's so good. Yeah. It's going to be deserved. Yeah, for me, it's Fendricks, but Goranson probably picks this one up.
Yeah. I have a bad memory for music in films. Like I usually enjoy in the moment, but then I kind of forget afterwards. Though I will say the most memorable has probably been Boy in the Heron. That was just gorgeous. It's reminded me a lot of Breath of the Wild, which I spent a lot of time in. But yeah, I know I enjoyed American Fiction, Oppenheimer and Poor Things. So I'm not going to weigh in here. Just I enjoyed those. That's all I'll say because I don't feel qualified to speak more on it. All right. Music Best Original Song. We have The Fire Inside from Flamin' Hot, the Hot Cheetos biopic.
Oh, really?
Which apparently is not good.
Oh.
I'm Just Ken from Barbie. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. Wazazie, a song for my people from Killers of the Flower Moon, and What Was I Made For from Barbie. What are the predictions here?
I haven't seen Flamin' Hot and I haven't seen American Symphony. But the odds have it, it's Billie Eilish, What Was I Made For from Barbie. And the answer was probably gonna be a Barbie. Because I have a feeling it'll pick up some other awards, but if nothing else, like this one was more of a shoe-in. And yeah, what Was I Made For is a fantastic song. So I will not be upset to see it win. But again, I haven't seen the context for a couple of these movies.
Right. Yeah, I also would predict this one of the two Barbie songs, probably What Was I Made For. I'm a big fan of I'm Just Ken.
I am too. But so good. But,
I think it'll be good no matter what. All right, we're going to pass Best Picture for now and come back to it at the end. Next one is Production Design. We have Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Napoleon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. Man, the exact one. I'll go first. Actually, I'll just say Barbie. Because like the plastic feel of Barbie World just blew me away. But also Poor Things is so good. Like, it's hard. It's really hard.
This is another close race. Mm-hmm. The top two odds wise are Poor Things and Barbie. Shocking. Mm-hmm. For me, it's Poor Things, but this is just whichever one of these does not win just got really unlucky with the year because the production design on these two movies is good enough to win most years in this category.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Napoleon, so I got to add that disclaimer. Although, you know, it's a more realistic war setting, which we've seen a bajillion times, and we have never seen Barbie World. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will not be mad with either of those two. It's such a hard decision. I think because I saw more behind the scenes stuff, so Varby, I'm probably biased there. But I also love the, yeah, I love them both. I'm not going to pick. I'm going to be annoying about it. All right, now we're into the short film. So do you want to just do animated?
Yeah, so I'll just quickly touch on, I've only seen one live action short, and it's the story of Henry Sugar by Wes Anderson. That's the odds on favorite. And I think that it's probably just, he's going to win. I think the Academy is going to see like, oh, we can give Wes Anderson the Oscar he deserves in an easy way. So I think that's probably where it's going to end up. But having not seen the others, I don't really want to weigh in. I really liked Henry Sugar, though.
Yeah, so did I. So why don't you go down these and just talk about your experience with them?
Yeah, so I went to the theater to see the animated short films. I'll preface with a couple. I haven't reviewed these on the show, so I'll do a little bit on each of them. I'll start with, there were two shorts that were added at the end to kind of bring it up to a feature runtime. Which were, the first one was called Wild Summon, and it's like a more realistically animated metaphor of the life cycle of a salmon, how they are born in a stream, swim to the ocean, and swim back to where they were born. Where instead of fish, the salmon are represented by women in scuba suits with like the big one glass like eye goggle.
Yeah.
And really wide mouths for whatever reason. And it didn't really work for me because it's quite long in comparison to a lot of animated shorts. And the visuals are a little unsettling, but that's purposeful because it's part of the message. But it's a very one note message. You know, it's don't, we're mean to the fish, save the fish. And it's like, I don't think it needed to be this long to tell me that. And honestly, most of the runtime, I was just reminded of the Futurama episode that does a salmon life cycle bit, which I prefer. So, that was that one. It wasn't nominated, but it was acclaimed. And then a really short one at the end they did. It's called I'm Hip. It's a music video animated in the style of classic Looney Tunes with a cat in a hat who's, you know, running around talking about how hip he is and how you are all squares and how, you know, noodles on the sax. It's fantastic. And if it ever comes to YouTube, I'll send it your way because I think you'd get a kick out of it. You know, it ends with, you know, him getting a piano falling on him and stuff like that. all right, now into the nominated. So I'll go in the order that I watched them. The first was Our Uniform, which is an Iranian short film, which is, it's a very interesting animation structure. Essentially, called Our Uniform, and it's talking about growing up as a woman in Iran and how everyone had uniforms at school and talking about, you know, letting your hair out sometimes and stuff like that. The structure of it, though, is that it's animated by using like stop motion to like lay out parts of her uniform, like the pocket of the jeans, and then paint on that pocket a little scene and then animate that scene. And then, like, you know, run out, like if they're getting on a bus, they roll out the sleeve of her top and then, you know, paint a bus driving down the sleeve back and forth, stuff like
that's really cool.
It is. I think you would really like that one just from an animation standpoint.
Yeah.
That's a good message. It's about, you know, how people become themselves, how people end up in their uniform. And it's a shorter one and it's got a nice message to it. I liked it a lot. Next one, not as positive. It's called Letters to a Pig. And it is, I believe it's just Israeli. It's in, Yiddish. I think, I hope I'm not wrong on that, but it's the story of an old man coming to a young school class to tell them the story of how during the Holocaust, he escaped capture by hiding in a pigsty, and specifically the chaser was about to check underneath where he was, and a pig walked in the way and effectively saved this man's life. And it's talking about how he wrote a letter to that pig down the road because of how impactful that experience was. During this, like, the kids are, like, giggling and, you know, making, like, pig faces and stuff. And then the second half of the short dives into almost like a nightmarish dream that one of the girls in the class is having, with a pig, and the pig getting caught in webs and then becoming unborn. It kind of lost me in the back half because just above my pay grade a little bit. I'm sure there's a lot of meaning there that I'm just not picking up. But I will say the animation is really interesting. It's mostly rotoscoped in almost like a light pencil at times and a lot of outlines, but then occasionally like you'll see the skin of an eye peek through the rotoscoping. Or like some flesh of a pig will show up through the lines of drawing. So from a technical standpoint, it's really interesting. And subject matter is obviously always applicable, but I thought it was good. It just lost me in the back half a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The third one up I watched is called, try and pronounce it in the original French, pachyderm. or pachyderm, you know, in English. It's about a little girl who I think is French, going to visit her grandparents in the summer. And I think it's implied they live in somewhere in Africa. And it's about her experience and, you know, fishing with her grandpa and seeing the big ivory tusk in the hallway. And it does a really good job of depicting what childhood fear is like. Like, you know, when you're told, oh, nothing can hurt you, you're safe here. But they do a good job depicting like the light coming through the door, just like radiating, like almost like a fiery red scariness. Yeah. The animation is really gorgeous. I don't really know how to describe it. It's almost watercolory. And the story is nice and sweet. And then it takes a bit of a sad turn. But overall it's a nice little snapshot of what being a little girl, a little French girl in Africa on vacation was like. So, I like that one quite a bit. Following that, it's called 95 Senses. And at first I was assuming it wasn't going to be all that good. This is the American submission. It follows an old man voiced by Tim Blake Nelson, who does a great job, kind of talking through the five senses and how they're kind of tied to experiences in his life. And each of the senses that they go over is like a different team of animators in a different style. And I think that's a really lovely choice and a good showcase. I'm not going to talk much more about this one because it has a very interesting story, and I'm hoping that, you know, post awards it ends up on YouTube or something, and I can, because I really want you to watch this one, if anything.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed that one for sure.
Okay.
Nice. And then the final nominee, which every time I think about, I like less. It's called. It's called War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. That is the title. Mm-hmm. War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. It is produced by Yoko Ono and Sean Lennon, John's son. And it's like backed by like Peter Jackson for whatever reason. And it's animated in the Unreal Engine, which that was a bit of a quirk.
Okay.
So it kind of looks almost like TF2-y sometimes.
Okay. You can still do cool stuff in there, but if it looks like video game characters that are
better than that, but it definitely looks kind of video game character-y.
Okay. Interesting.
The premise is a guy is playing chess, correspondence chess, which is you mail your moves back and forth via carrier pigeon. And he's like in the trenches at war, and it turns out he's playing chess with someone on the other side of the war. And, you know, the battle breaks out and they end up, you know, throwing hands, and they knock a pocket open and see the chess moves that on little papers all fly out. And they're like, oh no. And I don't want to hurt you. You're my chess buddy. And then the carrier pigeon returns with a war is over note. And they all go around and say, stop, stop the fighting. War is over. And then they needle drop. Happy Christmas. War is over. Which is like a smack in the face level of subtlety. It's because it's just like, you know, they're fighting on a battlefield and then all of a sudden, and so this is Christmas. Like, oh, what? Because I understand war is over, but what an odd place to start a song in. It just feels so out of place in this battlefield. And, you know, everyone, you know, they see the war is over note and they all, you know, hug. And it feels, I saw it compared to the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad where she solves racism by like giving someone a Pepsi. And yeah, it has that kind of a vibe. But the biggest sin for me, and you may know where this is going concerning a chess game, the chess is bad. You cannot do this when the chess is such a central pivotal plot point. You can't. Okay. So to explain it, we only really see like two moves that are made and like written. And the first move is knight to e5. And then the response move is F takes E5. That exchange means that person A moved their knight to a square where it can just be taken by a pawn. Mm-hmm. And then person B took the knight with the pawn. It's what? Why did you need to have a blunder, like a bad chess move, be the center of this plot? I don't know. Maybe there's some thematic nonsense there. But also, it ends in checkmate. They never get to send the checkmate because the actual war breaks out. But the checkmate they end up in, it's like, why are you still playing this game in this position? You would have resigned months ago. Oh, So yeah, bad chess, super preachy. Very weird needle drop. I understand now the title of the thing is War is Over. But
I feel your emotions on that one.
So to go over the odds, of course, that one's the favorite. Because it has names attached. It's very close between Letters to a Pig and War is Over. My pick is 95 Senses. But I think there are a lot of deserving in this category. There are exactly four deserving short films in this category. the odds right now have it as a very close heat between Letters to a Pig and War is Over. The struggle here is going to be that Letters to a Pig is very topical where anti-Semitism is in the world. And War is Over has big names. So you're going to get a lot of people who are voting with like the thematic nature of Letters to a Pig. It's also a like really well-made short. But unfortunately, I'm sure there are just going to be a crap ton of voters who don't watch any of these and just vote for the one that has the names on it. Yeah. So my guess is it wins. It'll be really sad. But I even if it does and we get the bad ending, like I'm so glad that I went out and saw these because I know you're with me, but I'm a huge appreciator of interesting animation and creative animation. So to be able to get so many different little snippets in like a 90-minute, you know, theater experience, I'll definitely be going back for this next year. I'm never as motivated to go to the live action or the documentary, but specifically animation is just right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, because if it's a short, you have so much, you can do so much with X. You don't have to the scope of a long project, right? You can do something really cool in a short amount of time. And
sometimes that's better. Yeah. You just get this, if you have a little story to tell, you just tell it and you don't have to worry about padding it.
Yeah. Now, you'd hope that the people voting would take the hour to watch all of these.
Yeah, but, I think it would literally be 60 minutes to watch them all. Yeah. Like they added on the extra two for runtime's sake.
Yeah. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I suppose we will.
All right, let's move on to sound. Best sound. Does this be like sound design?
Yes.
Okay. So we have The Creator, Maestro, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, Oppenheimer, and The Zone of Interest. I'll just jump in. It's got to be Oppenheimer. What are we doing? It's Oppie.
Okay, so the odds have Oppenheimer winning this one as well. I'm picking Zone of Interest, though.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Just because the sound is so pivotal and so important, and it really is well done to like hear, you know, birds chirping and water in the river rushing paralleled with a scream of terror. It's the Zone of Interest is the movie that relies most heavily on the score. And I think that it's just super well done. But to agree with you, Oppenheimer is great for score. The scene in the gym. So well done.
I mean, what?
Yes. Maestro. No, thanks. The Creator, I haven't seen, but I very much would assume it's very good. And then Mission Impossible. I do not remember a single thing about that movie, let alone the sound standing out.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm still sad that movie wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And the sound definitely didn't stand out to me. If we had a stunts category, yeah, we'd be talking about stunts, but we don't have that yet. So, But as someone who has not seen Zone of Interest, I go Oppenheimer, but I think you make a good point that that sound is more critical for that movie to work. So I think that could give it the edge it needs. Fingers crossed.
We'll see.
All right. Visual effects. I'm very interested in this category. So we have The Creator, Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, and Napoleon. I'm going to stand for Godzilla on this one. I think with the budget they had and the like how effective the effects were, I would just love for this to win so much. I watched a behind-the-scenes video on the effects, and these people are incredible. Like, just incredible for they were able to pull off. And, you know, I think, like, Guardians 3 looks good, but it's got like that Marvel, like, sheen on it where you can – it's got that look. We just know it's not real, right? Mission Impossible, I think, actually has some really bad CG at times. I don't know. I really want Godzilla to win this, man. I really hope it does.
So this is like my weakest category. I've only seen Godzilla and Mission Impossible. But I think that the narrative around this one is people are looking at the shoestring budgets that were given to The Creator and Godzilla. Mm-hmm. And you hope that these small budgets are highlighting good work and not highlighting crunch.
Yeah.
But regardless of all that, the odds right now have it close. I think they have Godzilla and Creator near the top, and Godzilla is, I think, edging out right now. I think that the narrative surrounding Godzilla Minus One are strong enough, and it's been, it's a newer film, so it's going to be more fresh in people's mind. But also, like, that would be my pick of the couple I've seen. The effects are genuinely fantastic. And I would have no problem with it winning. I really hope it does. That movie deserves a lot of recognition.
I really, really hope it wins. I mean, The Creator does look like it has a good look to it and looks like it could have cool effects. But yeah, man, I just want Godzilla so bad. Please. All right. Let's finish up with a couple writing categories and we'll go back to best feature to close this out here. So we have best adapted screenplay first. We have American Fiction based on a book. Barbie based on the IP, I guess.
Yeah, that was kind of controversial because they submitted as original and they're like, no, because the characters exist. Okay, I guess.
Okay, kind of.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer based on the book. Poor Things based on a book. And then Zone of Interest, I assume, based on a book. I'm not sure on that one.
So I believe it is, but I know also that some of the source material is Huss's diaries, the diaries of the captain.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I believe there's also a book it's based upon.
Okay. What are the streets saying for adapted screenplay?
So believe it or not, actually, it's looking American Fiction. It's looking Corey Jefferson is the current odds on favorite. And I wouldn't have any problem with that. I really liked American Fiction. I it's just such a creative story. Really well fleshed out, and it balances like the familial and the authorly sides of everything so well. My other shout I would be Poor Things for me. It's close between the two. I would be happy. I'd be happy with a lot of them. All of them are really strong.
Yeah. For me, so I think I want to give nods to comedy, right? Because comedy is very hard to write where it works. And, you know, to me, we got three on here. American Fiction, Barbie, and Poor Things are all very funny. Which just makes us very hard. But I mean, I don't know if American Fiction will win anything, so I'd love it to win something. And if it's, you know, for writing, it'd be really, really fitting. I'd probably, if I had to rank them, man, that's hard. I'd probably go American Fiction, Poor Things, and Barbie for me personally. But the top two are really tight.
Yes.
But like you said, really, really strong category there. All right. Last one before Best Feature. Best Original Screenplay. We have Anatomy of a Fall, The Holdovers, Maestro, May December, and Past Lives.
So the odds have this one as the Academy is going to give, like, they needed somewhere to give recognition to Anatomy of a Fall. And so right now, the front runner is Anatomy of a Fall. And I think that that would be a fine choice. I actually had in my notes, I wrote literally anything but Maestro, because all of these screenplays are so sharp and so well written. And especially now seeing May December and just the like depth to pick at in that movie is it comedy? Is it camp? Who knows? But I really like all of these screenplays, except I thought the writing was by far the weakest thing in a mediocre movie in Maestro. My pick, I don't want to. Anatomy of a Fall might win, and that's fine. Holdovers wins, I would love that. And then Past Lives is one of my favorites of the year, and May-December is just so interesting and unique. So all of those are very deserving.
Yeah. Of these, I've only seen Holdovers, so I'll go Holdovers.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I think this is a hard one to predict for sure. Yeah, I think, I don't know, based on vibes, I'm thinking Anatomy of Fall or Holdovers, but I'm really basing that on pretty much nothing. So we shall see. All right, Perk, let's get to the final one here. Best Picture, and you're going to be giving your rankings, your final rankings, I believe.
Yes, I've ranked them, and I'll be brief because we've been going on forever. But
yeah, so yeah. I'll go through them really fast. Best Picture nominees are American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Perk, what is your final ranking?
All right, so we'll start at the bottom, the only easy pick. This is a really strong year, especially when I look back at last year. It was just so much easier to differentiate like the top films from the lesser. But in this one, it's just very strong across the board. But yeah. Number 10 was easy. It's Maestro. I just didn't enjoy it. The performances are good. The directing is good. Cinematography is good. The music is good, but it's because it's Leonard Bernstein's music. Yeah. It's just not for me. Number 9, and this is like, it almost feels unfair, but I've got Barbie here. Not because I think Barbie was bad. As I said, after Tenet, it just gets tough. Just for me, the movie is really strongly directed and all the production stuff is great. Margot Robbie is great. Ryan Gosling is great. But the message is a little bit shallow, I would say. It's the ideas in this movie are really good and a lot of people need to hear them. And I'm glad people are taking away what they can, but not too much of it is overly challenging. In a feminist lens, quite like, I mean, it's a lot trickier stuff taken on by poor things for a similar character. This is mainly just kind of boilerplate. Women deserve more, and they do. And it puts that message across well. It's just, there's not all that much to pick apart. The real world scenes kind of drag.
Yeah. I think just talking about the themes again of Barbie, like, I think for me and you, who, like, we already agree with all this stuff, it's like, it feels a little bit like hand-holy at times. I enjoyed the commentary and comedy around the men more. I found that a lot more just funny and enjoyable. Like, let me teach you how to use Photoshop, like that kind of stuff. But I agree. I mean, yeah, I think comparing like Barbie and Poor Things, I prefer Poor Things because it's not as handholdy. But like you said, the themes need to be heard by a lot of people. So
yes.
Put them in Barbie, put them in Poor Things, you know, however they can get across to people who need to hear them.
And a lot of the people that are going to see Barbie are not going to see Poor Things. So
yes.
It's good to get the message out there in any way. I could have had a little more, I think.
Yeah.
Number eight, and this one hurts because I've been gushing about it, but I've got Killers of the Flower Moon. For not really any real reason that it's bad or anything. It is just very long. And I think, I don't know if it could be chopped down a little bit or turned into a mini series maybe. But it certainly feels long, very drawn out. It's a good story and great performances. It's just the movies above it kind of hit me in different ways. So seven, I've got Anatomy of a Fall, which it is really on here for the acting, among other good things, but Sandra Hüller is incredible. As I said earlier, one of the best performances I've ever seen. The child actor in the film is fantastic at portraying what he needs to. There's been a lot of discourse over how good the dog was. He was a good dog. We're proud of Snoop. But it's a story I've never seen before. It's a very interesting lens, looking at a troubled marriage through a courtroom. I don't want to watch it again, but it's very tactical and well shot, well edited, well directed, all of the above. Just a good movie overall. After that, we got number six. I've got Zone of Interest, which it also, like, these last four all just feel like they have to be, someone has to be lower, but
yeah,
they're all just so good. Zone of Interest is just such an interesting, another Sandra Hüller joint where she's just absolutely killing it on screen.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting meditation on, Steven Spielberg called out an old reference. He says it really does a great job of showing the banality of evil. And it really is. It's just, you get to see what is essentially a picture book life for a family with just the most hideous undertones and on an insane backdrop. And I think it's a really good movie at portraying atrocity without just like throwing it on screen. Cause sometimes that can be really poorly done. And not very, sensitively handled, but it's literally not on screen in this. It's just an undercurrent. And I think it's an incredibly important movie and a very unique movie. So I enjoyed it quite a lot. Five, I've got American Fiction, which again feels low, but I really enjoyed it. It's very breezy. It's just a fun watch, with outstanding acting from all involved, especially Jeffrey Wright. Really good direction, and the script is fantastic. The writing is just so tight on this one. I really hope it picks up that award because it's deserving.
Yeah.
Just an awesome concept, like. The whole surrounding the publication, the familial drama is a little bit more run of the mill in comparison, but that's just because of how outstanding and interesting the publication side of the film is.
And one of the best endings of the year.
Yeah. Really, really love the direction they went with the ending. It's so metatextual and funny. Okay. Number four. Now we've got The Holdovers. which is, I've said it before, it's a movie that's like a warm hug, but it's like a warm hug when you're like having a rough day type of warm hug. Just such wonderful characters to spend time with. They feel so real. The story's nice. It really leads you to just believe the bonds that these characters are forming, and the acting is spectacular. That it's going to be an annual Christmas time watch for me for sure. Number three, I've got Past Lives, which honestly, when I saw it, I was assuming it would be number one. So the competition was really stiff, but it's such a beautiful story of what could have been, and has lead performances, three central performances that are so important, because so much of the movie is just dialogue or even just sitting together in a moment. And combine that with a beautiful score and great direction from Celine Song. It's all around just an amazing romantic movie of what was, what could have been.
Right.
So number two, and this may come as a shock to the doting viewers, but I've got Poor Things at number two.
Oh.
Yes. And this is not a knock or anything. This is just me, you know, assessing my experiences with these movies. I love this movie top to bottom. The performances are great. The direction is awesome. The production is just beyond cartoon and wonderful. Yeah. And the story is great. The messages are really strong and a little more challenging than we mentioned with Barbie. Overall, it's stunning. It's practically flawless in my opinion. Just the difference, what set it apart from my number one. So I'm agreeing with the odds. I've got Oppenheimer here for Best Picture. It's just reassessing what my experience was with these films, because I love Poor Things. I had such a fun time watching it. But Oppenheimer, I watched twice within 24 hours and then went out of my way to get to another screening in a different format and just to see it three times. And it's whatever, Nolan fanboy. Yeah, I get it. It's just, it's such a powerful movie to watch as a science kid. There's so much in it that like seeing my history books come to life almost. And it's so beautifully put together. The acting is really strong. It's a star-studded cast. Like, you don't even remember, but I would have just given the supporting actor Oscar to Casey Affleck for his like 3-minute performance. And I just top to bottom, I love that movie. And so even though maybe like objectively, I think that the best movie might have been Poor Things, there's no such thing as objective in this kind of ring.
Yeah.
Maybe for me, the best movie here is Poor Things, but for Best Picture and like my favorite, just my experience with it, it's Oppenheimer. The odds have Oppenheimer. It's not especially close. So I feel like this year above all the others has just been a lot of runaway races, but yeah, I'm in agreement with the odds on this one.
Thanks. Very, very well said, Perk. Yeah, for me, the three movies I care about the most on this list are American Fiction, Holdovers, and Poor Things. I think of those, the only one that has any sort of a chance is Poor Things. And like you said, that's not like there's much competition there. And I would not be mad if Oppenheimer won. Like, I think it's very, very deserving. And it's an incredible movie. I just, from my personal experience with movies this year, those other three just I connected with a lot more deeply. I would predict Oppenheimer. My desire would be Poor Things, I think. So.
The one thing I hope is I hope we don't get what happens with last year's, where I know we will. I know Oppenheimer's going to clean up like 8 Oscars, but I hate when we can't spread the wealth a little bit, because like last year, Everything Everywhere, it's fantastic. Just a stunning movie. One of my favorites. Well, yeah, my favorite of the year, probably up there with Banshees, but Everything Everywhere took home like 6 or 7 Oscars, and Banshees of Inisherin got nothing. And so it kind of just fades from the consciousness for that, which is too bad. And
yeah,
you know, I would just like to see more recognition for more films, because You know, most of the films on the Best Picture list are going home with no awards, which is a shame because most of them deserve to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think going through these lists, I think a lot of the categories are stronger than I expected or remembered, you know. So I think this is overall a really good year for movies. But yeah, I think the two like bad outcomes, quote unquote bad outcomes are, yeah, one movie takes home a ton without much recognition for anybody else. Or Maestro takes home like
anything, awards, yeah,
or anything, yeah. But I think this is, I'm hopeful. I think this will be a good year, because there's just so many great movies. So, but yeah, I'm sure we'll check in on the pod here after the awards are over, and we'll do a little debrief. But those are our thoughts, our predictions, our wants for wins. So, yeah, hope for the best. Are you gonna watch it live?
I will not have the ability. I'll be on a plane.
Okay. I'm not going to.
I wouldn't. Anyway. I'll watch the acceptance speeches of people who I like who win. But
yeah,
like, it's just such a long show for like 10 minutes of content, really.
Yeah. Not worth it. But yeah, that's a little bonus episode for you. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out this week's normal episode. But besides that, thanks for watching. Bye.
See ya.